Myths are timeless structures of consciousness that reappear in different guises, but always with the same procedural guidance to the core of one's being. If one follows the directions that are revealed in one's heart when one has thought through the significance of the symbol and its relation to one's own process of inner development. So, for example, the Old Testament myth of the people being enslaved in Egypt can be deeply understood as the nature of the ego, enslaved to its own definitions, its own self-images, its projections, its internalizations of the projections of others, its need for approval and for the desire of the other in order to feel an absence of lack. And it knows it must free itself. It must let go of everything it possesses. It must take the risk of crossing the Red Sea. It must go through ego death. It must pass through the dark night of the soul and enter the desert of the real. It must trudge toward the holy mountain in soul consciousness to receive the commandments of God and then fulfill those commandments by reaching the holy land, the promised land, and conquering it. But the self is the living temple in the center of the holy land that is always already present. And all that occurs in that march toward the core is all part of a dream from which the self is awakened. But for that awakening to happen, the ego must be freed from its attitude. The ego, in fact, is a mass of attitudes. And in order to be free, the soul must give no latitude to an attitude, because an attitude is a defense against commitment. An attitude can be changed. Attitudes occur in the ego in pairs, sublime and ridiculous, holy and unholy, beautiful and ugly. Attitudes that are sublime and attitudes that are ridiculous. These differential attitudes that are based on emotional reactions, on anger, on infatuation, on illusions, wishful thinking, or self-attacking superego voices. All of these attitudes create disturbances in the field, and they bring about actions that produce karmic suffering. That is the nature of the enslavement of the ego. It's enslaved to its own attitudes that produce its self-defeat. Any attitude that is not processed will be acted out. This is a warning to every yogi. Every attitude must be processed, or it will be acted out. It will become one's karma, one's fate. And it will prevent one from reaching one's highest destiny. In psychoanalysis, especially in the Lacanian version, there is also a concept called passage à l'acte, the passage to the ultimate act. This is when the analysand's acting out based on a negative emotional reaction to some interpretation by the analyst decides to leave the analysis, and thus ends the process of growth, ends the process of internal development. But whether one leaves an analysis or an ashram, it is the leaving of one's commitment to the real that produces a loss of that power to shift from the lower death drive to the upper. And this is what exhausts the soul's capacity to reach freedom, to open the Dead Sea, the Red Sea of one's blood that has gone dead, to open it and pass through to the other side, to the noumenal, to the ever-living light. But one can only open that sea that presents an obstacle by recognizing the oceanic nature of consciousness that does not fear death by drowning, and it can deal with all of the affect because it has disinterest in it, disinterest and detachment and disidentification from the ego's attitudes, and can allow them to die in the desert as it reaches the light at the summit of its Mount Sinai. It is only one's freedom from the attitudinal error that prevents commitment to oneself that is the primary obstacle. The self has no attitude toward life, toward the world, toward others, toward its own body, because it knows only the self. It is non-relational. It is absolute. The soul is relational, but it relates only to God, to the real, to the yearning for love of the divine kind and wisdom that is real from the source and not a faux version in the imaginary register of consciousness that always leads one astray. But if there is any emotional reaction, whether anger or lust or paranoia or any other kind of emotional attitude, one must recognize one's enslavement and one must process it carefully. One must free oneself from the chains of those emotional reactions and recognize their unreality. This is the purification of the soul, freeing itself from the appendix of the ego, whose appendicitis creates a huge pain in the core of its gut, and it must free itself from this narcissitis if it wants to ever understand and achieve realization of the infinite self that is unborn and forever free. It is this surrender of the attitudinal attribute that is the disqualification of the ego that must be overcome in order to understand the true nature of God as the unconditional creative intelligence that is capable of accurately acting and creating, sustaining, and destroying at the moment that is called for by the absolute intelligence, and not to interfere with that process of life and death. And the only way one cannot interfere and get in the way of God's process is to be in the mind of God, in the heart of God, and not in the ego's version, filled with desire, with hatred, with anger, with projections, with lack, with desire for the other to fill its lack. And it must be free of any attitude toward the other or toward its own form in order to take the steps that lead into the unknown and unknowable desert, where only faith will guide one, and only trust that the manna from heaven will be there every morning, every moment, to nourish one on the quest to realize the self. Only with that total trust and faith and letting go of all that is known, of all that is petty, of all that is merely phenomenal, merely positivistic, based on the fictions of money and property and power and looks and all of the other illusions of the world of appearance. Only when one has left all of that behind can one know who one really is and what this is all about and why the self, the ultimate Godhead, has created this as your destiny to be fulfilled and realized through the total death of all you think you are in order to become that which is true, that which is good, that which is beautiful, that which is real. And liberate your consciousness from all illusion forever. Now is the moment to leave Egypt behind, to not even take time to bake your matzah, but to head out into the desert without waiting. Because the moment has arrived. Do not wait for the Red Sea to close again, for the moment and the window of opportunity to disappear. It is time for the ego to disappear from its own imaginal consciousness, to know the infinite freedom of the uncreated light of the self, and dissolve in that ultimate source of our being, in the eternal now. Do not fall for the fool's gold of temporary enjoyments and illusions of happiness within the ego that will turn to disappointment and devastation. Focus only on the real that is everlasting. Namaste. May you know the peace that comes from the emptiness, the letting go of all attitudes, and the realization of the infinite abyss of non-existing, unmanifest, absolute presence. And may you know the deeper peace of abiding always in the absolute, never falling into the illusion of existence as an ego, or even passing through on the wheel of life and death in soul consciousness, witnessing the ego's foibles and attempting to become free. Even that soul attitude keeps one on the wheel of karma, that the real self has never been subjected to. Know the supreme peace of eternal liberation that is here and now, and only here and now, but always here and now, as the blissful freedom of the pure awareness that you are in the core of the heart. Namaste.